Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Holiday Week here at the Damage Report, the last show of 2020. Good riddance. I'm so sick of it. It seems like almost yesterday that we finished 2019 on the Damage Report by doing our big Garbage People of the Year. Do you all watching remember who did that with me? Because I do. And he joins us now for JR Wednesdays. JR Jackson, how's it going?
Yeah, what was the last Garbage People? Why did we do it that way? Because of Thanksgiving?
You closed out 2019. I think again, because Wednesday was like our last show of the year. And if I remember correctly, you chose Mitch McConnell, I think.
I can regularly choose Mitch McConnell every day. That's the hard part, is you gotta find some variation besides Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. Those are two easy winners every time.
Yeah, pretty much always. And how much longer can Mitch McConnell last in government? The dude is a billion. We'll see. Maybe they'll be a Christmas present for us. Oh, but to that end, we've got two special things for you. So not only is JR gonna do the Garbage People of the Week, we already did our 2020 Garbage People of the Year. That's a top 10 that I did with Francesca Fiorentini, which is available now to our YouTube members of tier 2 and tier 3. We're gonna do our Garbage People of the Week to make sure that you get Garbage People. And actually, I'm gonna have to remember at some point to get the garbage can. But we also have a special sort of holiday Christmas themed thing we're gonna do at the end of the show. Once we're done with all the news, we got a delivery from Santa Dave Kohler, who brought a bunch of stuff to the studio that people have been sending the Damage Report. And I wanna show off some of the amazing things that people have made and people have sent in. So that's how we're gonna close out the episode today. Should be a lot of fun.
There's Christmas awesome gifts. Stuff.
There's Christmas gifts, exactly. It's like, it's Christmas in December, who would have thought? But anyway, with that said, thank you to all of you who are already joining us. Please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know we're active. And as we go along through the news, you can chat with us, send super chats, tweets, all of that. We'll be reading and responding to those as we go. But that said, everything went crazy in the last 24 hours. So why don't we start off there? Yesterday, we had a stimulus deal and it was gonna be passed and the government was gonna be funded and everything was gonna work really smoothly. And then Donald Trump, who had this to say in a video he uploaded to Twitter.
Despite all of this wasteful spending and much more, the $900 billion package provides hardworking taxpayers with only $600 each in relief payments. And not enough money is given to small businesses. Congress found plenty of money for foreign countries, lobbyists, and special interests while sending the bare minimum to the American people who need it. It wasn't their fault. It was China's fault, not their fault. I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation.
Two quick notes before we get into the substance. One, congrats Trump on being able to do the math on what a couple gets. Second, he says it's not their fault, it's China's fault. Okay, well, first of all, you're right, it's not their fault. On China's fault, yeah, to some extent, although not intentionally. Wait, but what if there was another option? What if the death and devastation and economic devastation wasn't just their fault or China's fault? What if it was your fault, Donald Trump? What if you and Mitch McConnell, even till right now, which we'll be talking about, were responsible for quite a bit of the death and devastation? But anyway, JR, we were gonna have a deal and it was gonna be crummy in most ways. And then Donald Trump decided, oh wait, I'm the president, I can get involved in this stuff. Why not wait until it's done? And now we've got Nancy Pelosi tweeting that he wants $2,000 checks. The Dems are ready to bring it to the floor this week by unanimous consent. Let's do it, which is good because she's sort of pushing for $2,000 checks. It's bad in that He had indicated earlier he wanted bigger checks, but she didn't bring him into the process earlier. She could have advocated for $2,000 checks, but whatever. If this is what it takes for her to be strong, at least her and Chuck Schumer are now unified. Let's do the Trump thing and do the $2,000 checks.
Yeah, so now the divisions, okay, this is just speculation. The divisions now are beginning to be formed within the Democratic Party about should we go along with this? Because, you know, Trump came up with this now. Because apparently we didn't have the leadership in place to do it our damn selves. So we have to get a Republican wild-eyed, lame duck refusal to accept loss president to make the case for you. This is the weakness of Democrat of establishment Democrats. You got Donald Trump making the case for you that you refused to make in your negotiations. I'm sure they brought it up. I'm sure they brought up more money than $600 in their negotiations. I'm not saying that part, but they definitely didn't have enough courage or fight to do something strong enough or public enough or bold enough to really put the spotlight on Mitch McConnell, Steve Mnuchin, who ironically Trump has put the spotlight on his own cabinet in their failed negotiations for the American people on this. Now they're like, oh great, a leader has stepped up. What's his name again? Oh, this guy stepped up and did it for us. So now there's gonna be folks, I think, again my speculation, that are concerned about that look, and they just might oppose it strictly because they don't want to look like they're having to follow Donald Trump's lead.
I'm fine with it. Again, like, you know, when the checks were to be contingent on his stupid name being scrawled on them, I'm like, the important thing is that people get the money. If he needs this to stroke his ego, whether it's the signatures or indeed what's happening right now, which I think has much less to do with him authentically being worried about the economic state of working families and more that he either thinks it'll help them in the Senate race, which is hopefully the thing that's gonna get Mitch McConnell to sign on to this, we'll see. Or more importantly, and it's what I was talking about in my pre-show a couple of weeks ago, why wouldn't he push for bigger checks? He's about to leave. This will be one of the last things people will remember him for. He doesn't care. He has no true conservative fiscal discipline ideology or anything like that. And it's not his money that he can give away. He can have people remember him, especially his fans, who he wants to follow him into whatever comes next, whether it's another run for something else or Trump TV or whatever, by giving them big checks. It's like the easiest thing in the world, which is why the Dems should have been trying to bring him in earlier. Like his interview with Fox and Friends from like a weekend or two ago, he talked about wanting bigger checks. He might have even used 2000 as the number at that point. So why not? Why not? Yeah. Probably because a lot of them don't actually support checks of that size, or else they would have signed on to, you know, Bernie Sanders or even people like Chuck Schumer. Yes, there are some who were supporting that quite a while ago.
Yeah, I think the I want to say funny part, but it's not funny as far as haha. But the funny part about this is that Trump accidentally stumbled his way into a populist point of view that actually, or a progressive point of view, at least on this particular one small point of this bill, because he's so upset about no one having his back on his fraudulent claims for an election loss. Okay, so obviously Democrats are calling him an idiot for going through all this, so he's mad at them. And now enough Republicans are starting to acknowledge after a month that he lost the election. So now he's mad at them too. He goes, okay, what does everybody that's against me not want? Oh,
yeah,
things for the American people that they deserve. I know, I'll go that way. So he's strictly there to get the attention, to make everyone angry that's opposing his fraud claims. And he stumbled his way into actually wanting to help American people, which shows us one clear thing. Both of these factions, of these establishment portions of these both of these parties, don't want anything for the American people. He got there because he's mad at both of them for not supporting his selfish goals.
Yeah, or possibly, like I read earlier, Axios was saying that one of the reasons he announced these pardons now is because he's getting increasingly jealous that Biden is getting news every day. Well, like doing the pardons put some news on you. This is a much bigger and easier way to do it. So yeah. I think that there's a chance that that is why he's doing it. And by the way, identifying that is like there is a consequence to that. And that is that it is possible that all of this will lead to us getting bigger checks. But not a guarantee, because I don't think that Trump really cares. He could have been pushing for that. His Treasury Secretary supposedly was having like 100 phone calls a day about the stimulus. They got the deal that Trump had agreed to. A lot of the stuff that he's calling wasteful spending now, which totally is wasteful spending, is in his budget. This is stuff he actually wants. He's just sort of performatively implying that he doesn't. He can just as easy as he can push for $2,000 checks, he can behind the scenes be talking to Mitch McConnell and being like, oh, by the way, it ain't actually gonna happen. Don't worry about it. I'm mostly saying this so that people will think positively about the Republicans running in the Senate, including Perdue, who's now claiming that he supports bigger checks, even though he was trying to cut the checks when they were $600. He wants them to be smaller than that. So a lot of this is performative. It might be something that can be converted from performative to real, but it might not. So let's not get ahead of ourselves and continue to put pressure.
Right. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the only way to go now. At this point, you need to have Democrats flooding the airwaves and going on as many interviews as possible and pointing out the fact, who's holding this up now? Hey, Trump's got this cult. Mm-hmm. Start speaking to them and be like, listen, your cult leader said you deserve $2,000. Who's standing in the way of that now? Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I mean, you've got all different wings of the party, like Nancy Pelosi's on, you've got AOC tweeting, let's go. Because Schumer backed AOC and Rashida Tlaib's amendment for $2,000 checks. I mean, it wouldn't be all that complicated to change it. It's gonna increase the price tag, but they certainly have money for other stuff, which we're gonna get to in a second. So anyway, a lot of people seem to be lining up behind this. There's not a lot of time though. After all, like the government could shut down any moment. The unemployment benefits are about to run out in about 3 days. Which I know some people might say, well, whatever, like it runs out, but then we start it up again. But no, there's a very real chance that millions or tens of millions of Americans might have to reapply and thus have delays in that money, of significant delays. I know people who had to go through that process the first time, and it can take a couple of months to start getting your money. That lapsing is a massive issue to millions of Americans. So hopefully this can be done expeditiously. I don't know that it's possible to get it done in the next few days, but
yeah,
we'll have to see.
You know, all these factors you just said, my last thing on this, all these factors you just said, all they are is pressure on Republicans who have been holding this up. Say, let's do it quickly, let's do it tomorrow. We've got amendments ready, we can write this up, let's do it now. Who's stopping that? All these things that people are concerned about, that's pressure, not on folks who want help for people, but on folks who don't want help for people.
Yeah. Why don't we turn now to one of those people? So who's gonna be holding up the bigger stimulus checks? Well, obviously Mitch McConnell is a big name there, but he's not the only one who could potentially throw a wrench in this. We've also got Rand Paul. Rand Paul, very worried about just giving money to people, as he'll make clear in this clip.
I think there are a lot of things. I think giving money though to people who are already working. Look, my kids are working and don't need a check. They're not rich, but they don't need a check. And most working Americans don't need a check right now. It's a really foolish, egg-headed, left-wing socialist idea to pass out free money to people.
Okay, so Rand Paul's got a big issue with the fact that these people who are suffering, and he thinks like if you have a job, you're perfectly fine and you've got no troubles during this massive economic downturn. And why wouldn't he know that? I mean, he after all is only, you know, a multimillionaire senator who doesn't have to really work and has no idea what's actually going on. So it's easy for him to think that helping people who are dying is egg-headed. What a weird, disconnected way to portray that. But also bear in mind that this is a guy who has an issue with just giving money to people, who also voted for the Trump tax cut that gave literally trillions of dollars to the wealthiest people in the history of our world. So maybe it's more to do with the people that are getting the money than the money being given to people in the first place.
Last I heard, Wall Street bankers, defense contractors, large corporations, they all, the people who work for, they have these things called jobs. We give billions to them. So we're talking about giving money away to people who have jobs already. We do that on a regular basis all the time. In fact, we say it stimulates our economy if we give them more money so that they can trickle it down to people who don't get those jobs and they get hoarded and put and slashed in their own bank accounts. Yeah, that's what actually happens with the money. But you know, when those things happen, Rand Paul may stand up and go, we're spending too much, and sit back down and vote for it. So this holy crusade that he's on to say we're wasting money on regular American people, again, he's putting his face and his name out there. So go ahead, let's shine the spotlight on him. Rand Paul does not care about what you're going through. He, in fact, is happy about what you're going through, and he says that you don't need any more money. Hey, this is Christmas time. People sometimes rely on tax returns coming in February, March, April to pay back the debt that they have during Christmas when they bought all these gifts that they couldn't afford. That happens on a regular basis. So people are in that crunch right now, and it's even worse because many of them haven't had jobs for months. Start saying to them now, it's Christmas time. Where are the Grinches? Who are the people that don't want you to put gifts under the tree for your children? Hey, your kid asked for that new toy. You can't afford it. Or if you buy it, you don't know when you're going to be able to pay it back. You know who's against that? Rand Paul's against you having a Merry Christmas. Go ahead, just make it materialistic. They do it every time. They talk about freaking Starbucks putting Happy Holidays on cups. They made a crusade out of it. But we can't make a crusade out of people not being able to afford to live under a roof. This is crazy, man. It's way too easy. They're setting us up and we're not hitting home runs.
Rand Paul is waging a war on Christmas. My book will be coming out in just a couple of weeks. That's basically what's going on. That's what's going on. And exactly, yeah, I know. He had issues with the Trump tax cuts, but I guess in the end, I'll give myself a tax cut. Seriously, when people support themselves getting money, I don't care at all about the conversation around the edges for it. It's their own economic interests. He's totally fine with trickle down economics. Why don't we get some like trickle up economics? Because here's the thing, at the end of the day, we're still a capitalist society. So when you give the money to people who actually need it, they will then spend it. It's gonna end up in the pockets of the rich someday. Why shouldn't we at least temporarily benefit before that happens? Let's add a middleman. And the middleman and the middlewoman is suffering in America these days. Let's let them get a little bit out of the money before it ends up going to Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and whatever at the end of the day. It's definitely gonna happen. Yeah. People are suffering. Anyway, it is not just Republicans who are potentially going to be advocating against Trump's last minute audible on the stimulus checks. We also have Amy Klobuchar, who I believe was endorsed in her presidential run by the New York Times. Here she is responding almost in real time on Rachel Maddow to Trump calling for much bigger survival checks.
I kept thinking tonight, well, these pardons are an attack on our very democracy. This is an attack on every American. People who are struggling to get by right now, out of work, whose unemployment, the unemployment is going to basically end the day after Christmas if this doesn't pass. We need the help for the states to get the vaccines out. And he is literally undermining our entire effort on testing and vaccine distribution. This was a hard fought negotiation. Of course, you're right. Democrats were pushing for more funds for the individual payments. But in the end, this was a negotiation. And he knows very well we're reaching the end here with the unemployment, with our small businesses can't take it anymore. One Yelp study early in the year showed we were having 800 small businesses close a day. And there's over $300 billion to help small businesses in this bill. It is the second biggest stimulus in the history of America. And for him to turn this down, obviously we have the votes to override his veto in the houses. We have those votes. But he should not be doing this right now when his own Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, was involved in the negotiations from beginning to end. He is literally trying to burn this country down on his way out, as I said at the beginning. And all we can do is push and make it very clear as we go into these Senate races in Georgia, Rachel, which party has people's back and which party is in the White House.
Well, I think a weird way to get across the message that you're the party after all that has people's backs is for Trump to at the last minute, the Republican, to say the check should be bigger. And then for you to do what Amy Klobuchar is calling for, which is literally to override the veto to make sure that people get smaller checks. That's a weird way to convince people that you actually have their back. Whether you think that Trump is being authentic or whatever, and it's not that she's 100% wrong. There are concerns about not passing this fast enough and the government shutting down and the unemployment insurance lapsing and all of that. But she's calling for overriding his veto, which would mean it would be on the Democrats then that the checks are smaller. It's already kind of on the Democrats. The long, hard fought negotiations she was talking about include any number of times where Nancy Pelosi has sort of willingly allowed the final bill to be much smaller than it could have been. But I really hope, as I think I consistently have, that the Democrats don't listen to Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah, part of the detachment from American people is being such a politician. So when you go through this, she went through this long spiel about what she cares about and who's really fighting for the American people. Right after she makes the case that she's not one of those people, it's outstanding. But Whenever someone points out how, oh yeah, we went through all this. Yeah, sure, we fought for more money in the bill for people because obviously we're Democrats. Well, how are we so sure of that? Number one. Number two, she clears that all by saying, but the idea, we already made this negotiation. So in other words, that eliminates what you just said. Whenever you say, hey, we did this, we did this, we did this, but that means you just, you're cutting off of everything else you just said, but we've got a negotiation. It sounds like politically you wanted the negotiation to go through and get it done so that you can go ahead and have your victory. Your victory is more important than what's in that victory. How about we have something that works rather than just have something? That's the argument that we're always having to have with these folks. And one last thing, talk about how small businesses are gonna need help. This stimulus package is gonna help small businesses. I saw a tweet, and I apologize for not remembering who it was because it was amazing. It said, you know what small businesses need? Customers with money.
Yep.
That's what small businesses need. So when you got American people that have none of it and aren't shopping, small businesses are gonna hurt. You give them some money to stay afloat for another month or two, and we still don't have any customers, they're right back in the same position they were before.
Trickle up economics. Anyway,
you're 100% care about small businesses, just in case I talked about last week. Every time we talk about small businesses, pay attention to what they really want to do for small businesses outside of just talk about them to prop up their political careers.
Mm-hmm. And look, as of right now, it looks like they're not going to listen to Amy Klobuchar. They're supposedly going to vote in the next 24 hours on the bigger checks. But again, that does not mean that this thing is like a done deal. A lot of people responded to Trump's last minute announcement as, oh good, we're saved. Maybe, but stay tuned.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Mike Pence was speaking at the Turning Points USA thing because they take them seriously. And he had this to say about what Democrats and progressives want to do to America.
They want to make rich people poorer and poor people more comfortable.
Yes, he got it. Okay, moving on to other news. No, but he's actually right there. Now he goes on to try to say that we instead want to make everyone richer. Well, okay, that's what you're saying. But what are you doing? What has your party actually been doing over the past few decades? Does it really seem like their priority is making working class Americans richer? I would say the results prove against that idea. Bajera, what do you think about Mike Pence's argument?
It's such an easy, first of all, his gold line, got him. You mean those people want to help you from, first of all, not once to, he didn't go for the normal steal from the rich, give to the poor thing. It was, he wants to make poor people more comfortable. Okay, let's go with that line. Hey, everyone out there that's uncomfortable after a damn near year long pandemic with job losses, personal losses, everything like that happening to you. You know what? Are you uncomfortable right now? The Vice President of the United States, the outgoing Vice President of the United States, loves that. In fact, he's upset that we're trying to make you more comfortable. Not comfortable, more comfortable. Still not comfortable yet. He's upset that you're not completely uncomfortable and on the floor crying and wincing in pain and wondering when your next where your next breath is gonna be pulled from. That's what he's happy with. And in fact, he's doing that to help billionaires.
Yeah.
Billionaires that are just fine. Who are you voting for again and why? It's just simple. They're saying it out loud. If they've always said it out loud, they just said it with a little bit more care and more veils over their hatred. But now it's just blatant and it's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and they cheered after that. But anyway, yeah. Look, it's not that I personally want to make the rich poorer. I would say that I am perfectly willing to do that and think that it's a prerequisite for a more just society. I definitely want to make the poor more comfortable. I definitely want that. I don't know why you wouldn't want that. Seems like a good idea. But look, Mike Pence is not going to find a message like that coming from someone like me. Me, a godliest, is not going to convince him that we should care more about the poor. I did, however, find a book that seems to agree with me. There's just some great quotes in it. You know, I love a good quote. Like, but when you give a feast, invite the poor. That was Luke. Whoever gives to the poor will not want, says Proverbs. Whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor, says Proverbs again. Proverbs was really big on making the poor more comfortable. Let's see. A righteous man knows the rights of the poor. A wicked man does not understand such knowledge. Wait, Mike Pence, which are you? Are you righteous or are you? You're looking a little bit wicked these days, actually. Whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. Oh, come on, Mike Pence, you don't want to call out someday and not be answered. And this isn't my book. I don't think it's magic at all. But you think it's a magic book. Maybe you should read it from time to time. It's really big on the whole making the poor more comfortable thing. I would actually say that if we were to really summarize Jesus's whole shtick, it was really about making the poor more comfortable. But I love that a room full of Christians all are like, yeah, they want to make the poor more comfortable. Those.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, at least, I mean, you know, those libs, Luke, John, that weird guy named Proverbs. I mean, they just wouldn't survive nowadays. I mean, Jesus especially, you know, oh my God. They would have like strung him up on a cross and threw some nails in his wrists and his hands and left him there to die. Oh wait, that already happened. Those are the people that we disliked. And now the people that say they worship these figures, they say they worship Jesus and they read the Bible and they know what's in it. Those are the people that are now advocating directly against it. You know what the Bible says? Bible says, and I'm gonna paraphrase because I haven't read in a while. It's harder to get what, a camel through the eye of a needle?
Yep.
Forgive me, mother. My mom is watching. I'm sorry, Ma. A camel through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich person to get into heaven. You know why? Because the rich person is hoarding money and taking it from poor people. And in fact, many times throwing them to the side to lie in the street and die just for their profits. Says Mike Pence, who now loves those same rich people and is against those poor people that are need to be a little bit more comfortable. Brett Ehrlich this morning in the meeting, I'm gonna go ahead and give him that credit because it was a great line. He said, you say you're gonna make someone more comfortable when they're in their last days of cancer diagnosis. When you're like, we're gonna give them this to make them more comfortable as they die. This is the stance that we're going with, and he doesn't want that.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Jesus, exactly. Look him up. Talk to Jesus, talk to Proverbs. Really fast. I know that this is a tangent or whatever, but you brought up the eye of the needle thing. And that is like my favorite thing about the Bible. Not just that it's in it. I love that it's in it and that it could not be more clear. You are not going to be able to make it into heaven if you're rich. And if you think about it for 3.5 seconds, if you rub two neurons together, you will immediately understand why. Because you cared more about getting that money than helping people. There's an opportunity cost to that. There's also a literal cost to that. You could have done good things with that money. If you're Jeff Bezos, you can do virtually anything. Everything that you then don't do that you could have done is on you. That's true for everyone, but for the rich far more because they have more resources. So if you hoard those resources while people suffer and die or are uncomfortable, then you're gonna pay for that. It could not be more clear. But one of my favorite things about some Christians is the efforts they will go to not learn that lesson. So when it comes to the eye of the needle, you can look it up. There is this long argument about why it doesn't mean that. And no, actually, like if you look at historically, there was a gate and yes, it was small, but like hypothetically you could fit through it. So all they're saying is that it's like harder and you have to be like a little bit more vigilant. Like they work so hard. to ignore what is obvious. It's there. Go look it up. It's like falling down like a Wikipedia rabbit hole. The efforts they go to not learn what is abundantly clear.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not a Christian, but it's in your magic book. Go take a look at it.
Yeah, the Bible also talks about how people that are fake Christians, especially like pastors and people who go around and preach the gospel, but don't live it, and in fact trick people into giving them their money so they can get rich off of them and using the word of God and your entire religion in order to make your life better, your own personal life better. Those are the folks that are the first thrown into the pit. They're the first ones thrown into the pit. You know why? Because they fooled enough people to think that Christianity is something that it's not. That's why. Exactly. And those people are stacking up constantly more and more and more right in front of our faces.
Exactly. Yeah, like, look, read the Bible. That can explain to you why hoarding wealth above all else is, you know, incompatible with a moral life. But if you can't be convinced by that, I got something more pop culture-y. Watch the Battle of the Five Armies. Just learn a little bit about dragon madness. It happened to Thorin. It can happen to you. Okay.
Wait, what?
No, it's actually true. He loses his mind and he turns on his enemies and or on his friends. And yeah, it makes for an unjust society. Whether dwarves or humans. Anyway.
Just because the thing bothers me. I was about to use the term proselytizing and I was like, wait a second. That means something else, but it does. I'm sorry. I hate when I get
that's good.
Time.
That's good. Okay, with that, let's move on to the other big news story of the last day. We've known that pardons are coming, and boy, are they here. The president just issued a total of 20 pardons and commutations less than 30 days before he leaves the White House, bringing the total in his presidency to 75. And we can only expect that there is going to be more and more as time goes on. So almost every category of this is worse than the one before. But we've got people like George Papadopoulos and Alex van der Zwaan. So those are two individuals who are involved, obviously, in the Mueller investigation, the Russia stuff. And for the most part, they're people who willingly lied to the government, lied to the Mueller investigators, didn't cooperate, hid illegal acts. And because they did that, they're now being helped out by the president. The president was able to evade accountability by impeding an investigation. And then once he successfully impeded it, everybody gets to go free. It's a really cool, totally not corrupt system that we've got. But that's the first category, JR, is the people. And these are not like Michael Flynn also. Like, this isn't the only people he's pardoned in that respect. But we are seeing more of that.
Yeah, it's he's going through his last. I mean, honestly, I'm not sure if everyone believed it because they were talking about how he was having meetings about who he should start pardoning and how the waves of which he should go about this. And honestly, I was one of them too. I was like, yeah, he likes to talk. He's not really gonna start doing this. I mean, I figured on a smaller scale. I didn't think there'd be none. But now at this point, you can expect probably 20 per week at this point, probably. Just finding the worst people he can possibly find to pardon.
Yeah, and look, I started off with the lightest group because honestly, yeah, I don't absolutely. Really even care about them. Like, George, I don't care what happens to George Papadopoulos. That whole issue, historically, everything that happened or whatever, we're never gonna get justice. I've accepted that, so I don't even care about these people. But it is important to note that that is one of the groups that he's pardoning. Then you have just corrupt Republicans. So you have Duncan Hunter and Chris Collins. So Duncan Hunter, it's one of the funniest stories of political corruption in some time. And it's just south of here, actually. Duncan Hunter and his wife were indicted in August 2018 for lavishly spending on items as inconsequential as fast food, movie tickets, and sneakers. As trivial as video games, I think he literally spent taxpayer money on Steam games, which, you know, gotta respect the hustle. Lego sets and Play-Doh, groceries, dog food, utilities, plane tickets for themselves. They also bought plane tickets for their rabbits, which that's really cute. But anyway, also corrupt. Federal prosecutors charged that Hunter had fraudulently spent more than $200,000 on expenses that included a $14,000 Italian vacation. And all sorts of other money. But it wasn't just the corruption, the stealing of the money. It was that they tried to pretend that they had to steal it for the vets or something. But then the best part was when in a live interview, he threw his wife under the bus, implying that she was in charge of the expenses. So she's the one that actually broken the law, if any law had been broken, which I'm assuming and hoping caused domestic issues. But in terms of Duncan Hunter, he now gets off scot-free. He defrauded the American people. He defrauded his own donors. But now The whole thing's clear. Doesn't matter. Pardoned.
Well, now it's off to the next. Again, I would, if he's going to do it anyway, I would just love to hear from his own face some of the reasons behind this, because he's got to defend it now. And we haven't even, as you point out, the list just grows as the more deplorable and disgusting people that he put on this list of pardons that we're going to get to. But I would love to hear him come up with some kind of jumbled reason as to why Duncan Hunter deserves a pardon. That Representative Collins, with his white collar crimes and insider trading with he and his son, deserves a pardon, because that has something to do with December 23rd, 2020. This is the point when it has to happen, because we've waited long enough. He's been put through too much.
Well, and by the way, Chris Collins, the fact that he's getting a pardon after insider trading means that even if, like, in theory, we were lucky enough to have consequences for actions in America, and Perdue and Loeffler go down for, you know, profiteering during a pandemic, he'll just pardon them anyway. Like, those things don't count. You get to be corrupt if you are powerful and wealthy. The only area I disagree with you, JR, is that you said now he has to defend it. No, he doesn't. He can do whatever he wants. It is madness. Like, there is a case to be made for pardons in some cases. You could do just things, but most of the time they don't. He doesn't have to actually explain this. It's done. They're pardoned. He can pardon anybody he wants. He can pardon what's her face, Epstein's accomplice. He could do that if he wants to right now.
He's got time.
He's got time, and he wishes her well. So now that was the second category, worse than the first. Now we have even worse. So you have two Border Patrol agents convicted in 2006 of shooting and wounding an unarmed undocumented immigrant, and then covering the shooting up, he commuted their sentences. So that's cool. And why not? This is candy. This is a peanut butter pie for his base. They love the idea that you should be able to get away with shooting immigrants if you're a Border Patrol agent, or if you just have a gun. That's what they want. And so I bet Stephen Miller is looking for cases like this for him to pardon. It doesn't even take lobbying at that point when it comes to these sorts of crimes.
Yeah, I read really quick. There was a point also in this whole process, the way he's going outside of the normal people lobby for these pardons. He's going outside of the normal protocol for even people trying to lobby for these kinds of pardons. It's just like, yeah, you know what? You may be Joe Schmo sitting at home. I'm sorry, sitting in jail, and then they come and notify you, hey, the president has pardoned you. He's like, really, me? Why? I don't have anybody working for my case to get pardoned. He's like, yeah, you're a bad person, so. That's why. That's all you need to know.
Exactly. Yeah. If you do certain sorts of crimes. And that's where we turn to the worst category for pardons, I think. You know, as bad as, look, the corruption, the shooting is terrible, but it has to be the war criminals. So we've got four Blackwater guards, Nicholas Slatton, Paul Slow, Evan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd, convicted by a federal jury back in 2014 after a lengthy trial that saw some 30 witnesses travel from Iraq to testify against them. Prosecutors accused the men of illegally unleashing powerful sniper fire, machine guns, and grenade launchers on innocent men, women, and children. Just killing a ton of people in a situation that they should have never been in. Okay, now we're not gonna go like super in depth because we've got a lot to cover, but you do need to know that, like, at the time, it was described this way: in killing and maiming unarmed civilians, these defendants acted unreasonably and without justification. In combination, the sheer amount of unnecessary human loss and suffering attributed to the defendants' criminal conduct on September 16, 2007 is staggering. And you can find out information about the victims and their family members coming forward. Kids were massacred for no reason. Whole cars of unarmed civilians that were destroyed by heavy weaponry that should have never even been in the area. But these are the sorts of people, like with those Border Patrol agents, the right loves cases like this. They lobby hardcore for cases like this. We're gonna have an example of that actually in just a second, but JR wanted to give you a chance to respond.
So these war criminals, murderers, of course, are his biggest prize in this wave of pardons. But if we just saw a week and a half ago, the execution put place for Brandon Barnard for that murder he was a part of when he was 17 or 18 years old. And there was a big news story about that. And that went through. Trump's got five more pardons set to go before he leaves office. Again, that goes against precedent that presidents don't do these do these executions as they're coming out of office.
Yeah.
He's going to oversee 13 executions since just July for the rest of this year, which is, again, breaks all barriers from previously. So he's going hard with these executions, but people who murdered other folks, he executed people as part of one murder. These other murderers, just because it was of the right kind of people for him, or was the right kind of situation for him, that's okay, let's pardon them. War criminals, and then normal criminals who are participating in murders here, let's kill them, let's hurry up and get this taken care of. It's all political. Yeah. It's like, politically I can look good if I pardon them, but politically I can still look good to all the people who hate, who wanna say I'm a law and order guy and hate every person who is in prison now. So
yeah.
I can kill them, but I can pardon these folks. It's not by mistake, let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I know some people might be thinking that, oh man, this is horrific. The idea that he can pardon these people and just expect that it's just gonna slide by and we're not gonna notice. No, that would be horrific, but this is worse. He doesn't want it to slide by unnoticed. He wants the right to see him taking people who go to the Middle East and murder civilians, border patrol agents who unnecessarily try to gun down immigrants and then try to cover it up. They want this. Like, it is very difficult. And I understand that this sort of thing, there are really hard truths that turn people away from politics, but you need to understand what we're up against. This is a movement that worships killers of particular sorts of people. Like, people in the chat I see are asking about a possible pardon of Kyle Rittenhouse. That is apparently not a possibility because as of right now, he faces state level charges and there's nothing Trump can do about that. If he could, it is possible, and maybe they'll find other examples of people like him. I don't know. Like, imagine if, are there federal charges against the militia members that were trying to kidnap the governor of Michigan? No. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But his side loves this. They want to see it. And I want to give you an example of this. This is not just a thing where it's like 4chan will be excited or Breitbart will be excited. Here is one of the people on Fox News ecstatic about the news as it was announced.
I would note also the Blackwater contractors, and you looked at that story of Raven 23 and how it was misconstrued against those guys. God bless the president for having the courage, which a lot of other presidents wouldn't do, to pardon those men, those veterans who were there defending diplomats, put in an impossible situation.
Let me just add one more thing.
No, they were supposed to be defending diplomats. They chose to put themselves in a position and then react in a way that is unconscionable, killing unarmed civilians, destroying children. The idea that there should be no consequences for that is a position that only people like Pete Hegseth, who, by the way, this is not the first group of war criminals he's advocated for. A couple of years ago, Trump pardoned another war criminal who went to the Middle East, killed civilians unnecessarily, willingly, totally, not even in a combat situation. Just murdered someone that was being detained. These are the sorts of people that they lift up. They want killers. Like, there's just no equivalent. Like, there's nobody we worship on the left for the violence they inflict on groups that we oppose. That's just not how we approach the world. But that is the way a significant portion of the right approaches the world. They don't just oppose documents. They want violence and brutality against undocumented immigrants. The whole thing about the cops, the social movement that we've seen this year, we've been horrified by the violence of the cops running people down with their cars, brutalizing people. The right has loved every bit of that. Like, you really need to understand that we are going to try to accomplish our goals, but we are going up against people who would love to see us brutalized. If somebody busted into TYT studios right now and started shooting, you don't think there'd be people on the right that'd be happy about that? I know that's dark. That is a very dark place, but that is 100% true.
And it's happened. Let's keep it real, where people advocate for that stuff. Again, you brought up the militia members who wanted to kidnap the governor of Michigan and execute her on camera. So again, we didn't hear anything about how he's condemning them and how could they, and anti-American, they're called patriots. These are the folks that we call patriots. This is what they think patriotism is for this country, because there's kinds of killers. The ones that support their agenda are patriots. The ones who don't are criminals. It's just somehow killing is this thing that we can put into two different lumps. And it's okay when you just do it indiscriminately, as long as you're part of Blackwater and you're in a foreign country, killing people who you don't think deserve to exist. That's okay. And one more thing. So Pete Hegseth said, God bless him for doing this. There's God again popping up again. How does God have anything to do with blessing someone who is pardoning people who murdered innocent people? Is God a part of that? which part of the Bible said that? And then God said, murder those Middle Eastern folks because they don't matter. Which part of God has to do with this? Where, again, it's such a normal statement to just throw in there. God bless someone. God bless them. God, why is it God bless them? Just like, how about Pete bless them? Pete Hegseth bless them, because you're the bad guy who's endorsing this type of behavior. Not God. God's not speaking here.
Yeah, it ain't my God, it ain't my religion. But you can say we need soldiers for national security, and I'm glad about that. Whatever, you can do that. You can't say that God would sanction literally any of this. Certainly not the New Testament God, at the very least. You think that they were in a difficult situation? They could have not been there. They could have not been in that situation. They could have not pulled the trigger. And you might say, well, they were scared for their own lives. Okay, I think that Jesus might have expected you to take on some personal risk rather than killing unarmed children. I think maybe that's what Jesus would have landed on. And yeah, as someone pointed out in the Twitch chat, by the way, Trump is holding up these Blackwater mercenaries as heroes, but the people in Normandy who died, in that case, seeming to really believe that they were, defending America against the worst political movement in the history of our planet, they were losers and suckers. So we have an idea. It's not that he has one view of soldiers. His view of soldiers based on what they're doing. Dying against the Nazis, loser and sucker. Murdering civilians in Iraq, heroes. It's actually pretty simple. We found out not long ago that Donald Trump had apparently had the opportunity to purchase additional doses of the vaccine from Pfizer and decided somehow in the midst of a pandemic that, nah, we don't want to spend the money on that. And there was an uproar about it for some reason. People seem to want to be vaccinated or whatever. Well, apparently they have actually reached a deal now. The 100 million additional doses will be purchased between now and effectively like the middle of next year. So we will get that. And supposedly the purchase will provide enough supply to vaccinate every American who wants it by June 2021. Okay. That's good, I guess. I thought we all expected that already. I didn't think we needed those extra doses to get to that. And that's still a ways off, obviously. But now they have about 200 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine, which is enough to vaccinate about 100 million Americans, which when you factor in the percentage of Americans who are not going to take the vaccine willingly, that's going to get us a good bit of the way there, even if it will take a while, JR.
So, I mean, I guess that's all that's left is the fixing portion of this, since balls were dropped. Things were delayed, people ignored the problem before. I mean, I guess anything that's different than the continuation of what's already been happening is good news, which, I'll take, it's fine. Again, like you said, a number of Americans that'd be willing to take it, which there'll be speculation about it, which is why we're doing these public vaccinations of public officials. And so, I mean, they're going hard with that part. Continue to go ahead and make sure people know that it's safe and figure whatever ways we can get, we have until June of next year to when people will fully have a chance to get it. Now is the time to really educate everyone on what's it about, what it can do, and how it affects some people. Let's just be honest with people, because I think that's the only way to fight the numbers of people who probably, and it's fine if they have some kind of objection to it. They don't know what's going on yet. This is still just like thrown at people, and there's this distrust in this administration who screwed this up since the very beginning. I try not to be too hard on the folks that have speculation about the vaccine, because what we've been talking about for 8-9 months, how horrible and ridiculous and incompetent they are.
Yeah.
Understand.
Again, the vaccine wasn't developed by the Trump administration.
True. No, you're right. But this is the way people think.
It wasn't developed by them. They're going to tie it together.
Yeah, because it comes with his face. He was connecting his face to it. We got Geraldo saying we should name it the Trump vaccine, which would make no one take it. So,
oh my God, I wouldn't take it. No, I wouldn't, obviously.
So things like that. You have time to get people to understand what's in it and do it honestly. Don't just have people sticking needles in their arms and be like, yeah, it's on. Here you go. You should do it too. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about the number of people getting the vaccine, because that'll be a problem if tons of people don't.
I agree. One of the way that they've been trying to get people to be confident about it is having people they trust take it publicly. Like Obama's apparently going to take it. Gandalf already did. So who do you think, if you could pick one person, who would get through to the most people, and especially the most people who might be hesitant about it?
It's hard to say. the one person who's who again messed all this up was Trump. So
yeah.
Not messed it all up, but was the face of messing it all up was Trump. So if he does it, that turns off just as many people as it turns on. So that's kind of hard.
Maybe. I think his hardcore fans are probably least likely to get it. So him getting it at least has a chance of getting through to them. I think on the one hand, he's never done the right thing when it comes to the pandemic. So I guess I'd have to guess that he's not going to do it publicly because it would be helpful to. On the other hand, Trump, if you're watching this, and I know you probably do watch this. Think about it. Everyone would cover it and they'd say how like serious and presidential you are. They'd be speaking nice about you. Oh God, how great would it be, Trump? Come on, go get the vaccine, man. Anyway, that said, I do want to update you on you. So we give the bad numbers on the pandemic a lot here on the damage report. I have a good number, I guess. A total of 614,117 doses have been administered to Americans as of today, according to the CDC. That figure accounts for both the Pfizer vaccine as well as Moderna's, which obviously is a much smaller percentage of that. But we are closing in, we've passed 500,000 Americans who are now vaccinated again. It doesn't mean that they're 100% protected. It doesn't mean that they're immediately protected. And you still do need to take this seriously, particularly if you're not one of those 500,000 people, as I'm assuming literally everyone watching this is. Honestly, if you've gotten the vaccine, please leave a comment because I imagine nobody's watching has. That said, the number is increasing every day. We are doing the right thing. It's just on us to be as responsible as possible with the time remaining in this pandemic.
Yeah. It's again, the release, it sounds like it's the release of the new Bronco next year or something, you know, like it's coming out in June of 2021 and you have to like wait until you get your opportunity. And lastly, my last great thought on this is also once people, those 614,000 who've already gotten it, continue to social distance, continue to wear your masks.
Yeah.
People are going to start thinking this as the, you know, the Superman vaccine, and suddenly it doesn't affect anyone. Again, let's go back to the beginning. This is a virus that you pass on. So if you're walking around still with any kind of antibodies, you're passing it along. You know, it's just exactly. Calm down.
Yeah, no matter what happens, continue to socially distance. People are not the answer to any of your problems. Stay away from them. Anyway, let's reset really fast. Really bizarre update on the pandemic. Did you know that up until very recently, there was apparently a place in the world that was safe from the pandemic, but that has come to a close. On Sunday, the General Bernardo O'Higgins Riccolme Base, a Chilean research base located on Antarctica's northernmost Trinity Peninsula, confirmed that 26 Army personnel and 10 civilians working as contractors on the base tested positive with COVID-19. The outbreak comes after at least 3 people tested positive for COVID-19 on a military vessel that had been supplying logistical support to the base between November 27th and December 10th, which means that even Antarctica has COVID. Like we apparently couldn't figure out that you need to be very careful about the things you're sending to these people who are away from everything. But now it's there and a bunch of people have COVID.
No, and it's probably some, there was some probably some sense of comfort in seeing how isolated they were, and makes it even easier. So I mean, again, it's, if we just follow the way that we know things work, even if it's things like this, we can help at least to some degree. That it kind of sucks because it felt it seemed I feel like Australia was one of the countries as well. It seemed like something that was like a comfortable feeling, even though it's not happening here. It was like at least somewhere. But
well, I mean, a lot of Australia is doing quite well. I know someone who moved to Australia from LA during this, and there, like, they're full casinos. You don't have to wear a mask or anything, but it's actually safe. Yeah, that's true. Safer than Antarctica, apparently, or at least at that particular base. Of course, everybody in Antarctica is isolated from others. The positive that I would guess is that if they do get the vaccine there, it'll be very easy to keep it cold enough. So they do have that. But anyway, we still need to be careful. I'm hoping, like, the space station, is there still a spot that humans live that doesn't have COVID? That is an open question at this point. Tinkerbell Pixie in the Twitch chat says, if they pass it to a penguin, I will cry. It's like the last thing the penguins need, honestly. COVID being introduced to Antarctica or polar bears. Either way, leave them alone. They've been through enough. Anyway, okay. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, the question comes, John, you brought up polar bears, and obviously you have a lifelong connection to those animals now. So the question is, would you put up with what you had to put up with the fear of polar bear attacks just for the sense of not having to deal with the thought of COVID being around for maybe like a month. You gotta live amongst polar bears, but COVID is not there.
It's possible that the remote island we were on, Svalbard, I wonder, have there been cases of COVID in Svalbard? That is an interesting question. I don't know if it has it. Maybe someone in the chat can let me know. That would make me feel a little bit better. Honestly, when I was on the ship for multiple weeks and had no contact with the outside world, we didn't have COVID back then, but it was nice to be, you know, disconnected from all that, not have to worry about anything Trump was doing. Like, you know, if at that point I think we were worried about North Korea and California nuking each other, whatever. At that point, it seemed kind of nice to be out of the area. Everybody, it's the end of the week and I'm still saying sort of the end of the year. And so it's time to take out the trash. Get off my backs. It's the last Garbage People of the year, no matter what. I don't care. Anyway, we've got some Garbage People out there. JR, who was your Garbage People person of the week?
It's gotta be people that lump in this group, but you have to have a couple of names. So I had Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio. But not specifically for the reasons people were thinking, but it is surrounding those vaccinations. So they publicly took the vaccination for COVID, sucked their arm out, made sure a needle was in it, made sure people saw it so they know that it's safe and effective, and that if they're willing to take it, you should too. And people were upset that they jumped to the front of the line, as was said, jumped to the front line after they supported Trump's misinformation on it for an entire year. Went through all this, but they're the first to get it. And I think some are even upset at Kamala Harris for saying, yeah, I think everyone should get it. My beef is not that they got it, because I think they should. Because especially the irresponsible people like them who've done and their actions, honestly, is what I'm more concerned with. Because if they don't get the vaccine because of how irresponsible they've been, they can still spread it. That's the whole point, right?
That is true.
It's not so we could see them die or something, the way some people say. Because by the way, they won't. They're gonna get great care. They all did. So the idea now is to make sure that the spread doesn't continue. So it's not that they got it. It's that the whole time before they got it, how many times did they support Trump and his misinformation? How much did they say, oh yeah, it's not a big deal? Oh, this social distancing is somehow socialism, Marxism, Nazism, and anything else they can say that's an ism. And that mask wearing is absolutely ineffective. They went through this the entire time or supported people who did. So if you said nothing while your president was saying it, you supported it. Keep it real. That's my beef with them and more people that will continue to have that. I just want to focus the disdain for what they said and their actions more so on the fact that they got it, because they're all gonna get it. Let's keep it real. I mean, I'm trying to be real on that part. There's no way they're gonna turn it down. But let's point out, after getting it, they did say all the stuff previous to it that perpetuated how many more deaths that were unnecessary, how many more sicknesses that were unnecessary, how many more lives that were turned upside down because of their lack of care for trying to help Americans. That's the reason for this, and people like them, because Trump can't do it by himself. He needed people like Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and the list can go on and on and on.
Yeah, Mike Pence. You had Joni Ernst there in one of the pictures. Joni Ernst goes from saying that doctors are lying about how many COVID dead they have so they can make extra money to, hey doctor, could you inject it right here, please? Actually, I'd love your expertise to keep me safe from the virus. Oh, by the way, after this, are you gonna go back to lying to people about how many COVID dead that you have so you can make more money? That's who these people are.
Yeah,
I agree. You know who's not? I think what?
You know who's not administering those vaccines? Dr. Atlas.
That's true. He doesn't know how. He's not qualified. Yeah, they exactly. Don't it's very that. Frustrating to see them spreading so much misinformation, lying about all this, and then getting access not just before everyone, not just before us, but before people who are far more vulnerable than them. They get to lie and lie and lie and allow Trump to do whatever he wants. And Mike Pence basically did nothing while drawing a salary this year. And they all get it. Marco Rubio, who like he thinks, hey, no worries, I'm gonna spend this year just put my head down. I'm occasionally gonna tweet out Bible verses or whatever. And then I'm gonna pretend that I was strong during these years. No, you weren't. You never were. And you're not gonna be in the future. It's gonna be difficult to convince people of that. Anyway, yeah, total garbage. I hate it. I get why they're getting it. And look, the good politicians getting it, I'm glad. But the bad ones, they've been so protected, so insulated. They got Dr. Johnny Bananas waiting in the wing to give them the monkey antibodies. And even still, they're spreading COVID left and right. None of them even need it because you know they've all had it, whether they admit it or not. They all got infected. Anyway,
yeah.
For my garbage person of the week, it's not first of all this guy, but it's eventually going to get around to Matt Gaetz with his little gas mask. Remember that was so funny at the beginning of the pandemic. Everybody was being so hysterical about COVID, and he like lampooned it by like wearing a gas mask, and then a third of a million people died. It was funny. Who says right wingers don't get humor? Anyway, he's garbage for that reason and others. We'll get to him in a moment. No, it starts off the garbage people of the week this week are those who are just blissfully free to have fun and have parties after spending the year, like JR said, spreading misinformation and making sure as many people die as possible. So I want to take a look at this first of two videos. This one is the Whitestone Republican Club in New York City. Here they are having a grand old time. Okay, so a couple things about that video. First of all, is it the lamest party ever? Yes. The guy in the hat, I was gonna say something. I'm gonna pull back from it. I was gonna criticize him in a very particular way. But
say it, John.
Nope, it's below me. If Francesca was here, she'd say it. I'm not going to. Anyway, totally lame. Totally lame. By the way, interesting little note about that video. That woman with the hair who's now leading the conga line. That's a woman who has run for state senate as a Republican. She's now running for a citywide office in Queens, which has had 7,400 COVID deaths, the fourth most of any county in America. And you know what? It's probably gonna have a few more because people are partying it up there and not taking it seriously at all. Whole bunch of people traveled in, no masks, no anything, close quarters, no social distancing to spread COVID knowing that they're rich and they'll be fine no matter what. It's not serious. Only 300,000 people had died by the time they had that party, but they're having a grand old time after presiding over the biggest failure of not only the government, that's clear, but I would say America and its people that we've ever experienced here in this country.
Dance it up. I think your first thought is the first thing everyone thought. Who wants to be at that party? That's the party that you're willing to spread COVID around for? Oh. That's the one?
I'm just gonna say the hat. Anyway, that's not the only one, of course. You've also got Matt Gaetz, who started off the pandemic. Let's go to the full screen of that image. Wearing a gas mask on the House floor because he thought it was so funny to joke about the fact that people were worried about this. Remember, this is when they were all saying it's just the flu. You don't hear that so much anymore, huh? That little talking point. They seem to have moved on from that after it killed 10 times as many people as any year with the flu. Well, he's having fun too. Here he is partying it up. I know what you're thinking. What would it look like if Butthead danced? We don't know because that ain't dancing. But anyway, there he's having fun. And why shouldn't he? I mean, he's only an elected official. He only spent the entire year doing absolutely nothing to stop his constituents from dying. And plenty of people in his district have. But he doesn't care. And he's certainly not grieving after the worst year of our lives. He's having fun and he's dancing again. No masks, no socially distancing inside, freely spreading COVID and all of that. They're having some fun as we close out this year.
That's what I'm trying to figure out though. Is he gonna do a public vaccination as well to let everyone know they should get the vaccine and that it's safe and effective? Because these are conflicting actions now. I just wonder if he's gonna do it. If he doesn't, okay. Then it means he's being consistent. I just wonder if he's going to.
With him, I honestly don't even care. Oh God, I just can't wait for him to eventually lose or become the Republican nominee. And why shouldn't he? He's like the pure distillation of all the worst parts of their party. Anyway, those are our garbage people, but we're not the only ones who count here at the Damage Report. We've also got you. And so every week we do two things. First of all, we ask you for suggestions for garbage people and you provide those. Obviously, there was much less time for that here. But then we have you vote. And the way that you do that is by heading over to the community tab on our YouTube channel. And let's see, many of you did, almost 7,000 even in this half week. And here's who we've got. So our number five garbage person of the week, as determined by the community, at 4% of the vote is Betsy DeVos for telling career staffers to hold up Biden's agenda. And also possibly to get those war criminals pardoned, because of course they worked for her brother who headed up that mercenary company. But anyway, number four at 5% of the vote was Sidney Powell for facilitating Trump's efforts to undo the election. That was great work there. Number three is Ron Johnson at 12% of the vote for blocking relief and peddling conspiracies. And in a couple of weeks, probably trying to challenge the results as the senator on that side of that whole deal. Number two is Michael Flynn at 25% of the vote for calling for martial law. That's always fun. Remember, he also got pardoned too, and then called for martial law for the guy who pardoned him. It's a great grift. But with more than 50% of the vote, number one, Republicans for stopping COVID relief and then getting vaccinated. So they sort of agreed with JR there.
Oh,
JR, well, that one sort of went with you, actually.
Hey, I just, you know, I just put my finger in the air and I can read the will of the people. I can read the will of the people.
Anyway, those are the garbage people of the week. Thank you to everybody who voted. Now, that said, before we close things out, I just need a couple of minutes because these are the holidays and you all have been in a festive spirit indeed. Thanks to Santa Claus, who is actually Dave Kohler. He delivered some presents that you all sent to the studio, and I wanted to thank people for doing that. So first of all, coming from Alex, the Punch Dragon, sent in this ring that has a tiny little dragon embedded in it. How nice is that? Little dragon there. Let's see, we had another dragon coming in. Sent this dragon, little dragon standee.
The dragon
nice
motif.
Dragon.
The dragon motif is growing. I enjoy it.
People like dragons. Dragons are everywhere. Let's see. Okay. One of the coolest things is when people send in things that they made. So we talked not long ago about someone who worked literal iron to make these awesome bottle cap openers. But here, Julie, longtime listener, makes these awesome tumblers. And this one has not only a sword, but also a dragon coming out of it. How cool is that?
Jeez.
That's really awesome. Thank you.
Things like that, I'd be afraid to use because of how fancy it is. Like, so much, I can tell, so much work was put into you. Like, if I drop this or if I spill something the wrong way on it, maybe I shouldn't put it in the dishwasher.
No, these are not dishwasher safe. I'm very worried I'm going to forget that in 2 years and then wash it. But we'll see. Okay, there's two other things. So first of all, Rob Shively sent, this one is not dragon themed, but I think as soon as you see it, you're gonna realize that it is very awesome. It is Captain America's shield.
Oh my God.
How cool is that?
It's
I'm not
shiny
saying
too.
That I'm Captain America. I'm just saying I'm slightly more Captain America than I was before Rob Shively's gift got to the studio. There is no way that at some point Cenk Uygur is not gonna pose with this in a picture, by the way. He can't wait. But anyway, I want to hang on the wall of the studio. How cool is that?
Wait, what's it made of? Can you tell us, is this, God, I wanna know like the material this is made of. Is
it's, like a, it's like a thick plastic. It's not vibranium. I can confirm that. I've thrown it across the room and it didn't take out the Nazi I was throwing it at, unfortunately, but it is very cool. It's made of a heavy plastic. It is pretty heavy though. If somebody does rush in, I don't know if that will protect me, but I will be hiding behind it. So anyway, and the final thing, by the way, thank you again, Rob. The final thing was sent by the Quilting Dragon. So the Quilting Dragon took one of our Dragon Squad shirts and converted it into this awesome pillow. This like thick, plush, awesome pillow. Very cool. I sleep here occasionally at the studio during the day. This is now gonna be the go-to pillow for that sleeping. So thank you, Quilting Dragon.
I'm not in charge of the store. I'm not in charge of how merchandise gets made. But all I'm saying is if there's a bunch of Dragon Squad pillows suddenly for sale, there's a chance there's a partnership available. I didn't say it. I'm not promising anything, but I'm just saying.
Exactly. No, it's actually awesome and it's super plush. My favorite pillows are always very thick and, like, I guess bordering on hard. I don't know what your pillow philosophy is, but it definitely fits for that. So thank you, Quilting Dragon. Everybody who sent stuff in, that's so nice that you're being that thoughtful around the holidays. Really do appreciate Absolutely. That. So
yeah, that's you. Awesome.
And we're very soon. Nice
you get a nice little dragon family, John. I enjoy
exactly.
this.
You can actually
nice.
See it now. Right there, Bernie and AOC are hanging out with the dragon. I've been wanting this for literally years, but we're gonna get a thing set up in the studio where, like, lots of people have produced awesome art and everything. I've wanted to have a thing to display all of it. We're gonna have that soon, and maybe right around it we'll have the shield and we'll have Emma's jersey. It's gonna be pretty cool very soon.
That's dope.
Anyway, thank you again, everybody. And finally, thank you, JR. Happy holidays. Thank you for joining us for the final JR Wednesday of the year.
Hey, it's been wonderful. It's the final JR Wednesday, so we've eliminated that next week whole thing. Is that what's going on?
No, it's still going to happen. I'm just sticking with it. Anyway,
I mean, don't. It's very easy. You could come next Wednesday and be like, "And JR," and there's a blank spot. Just, you know, because I was told.
That almost happened today. You got there like 3 seconds before we went live. But anyway.
Nobody needs to know the magic that goes behind the scenes for this.
You brought it up. Anyway, JR, thank you again. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Love it.
Excited to be joined once again on the program by the founding editor for Mediaite, Colby Hall. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. I saw that you recently wrote about Deborah Birx, who's been a really interesting figure in the last year. And she apparently is considering, regardless of what happens with the Biden transition team, she's apparently going to be retiring after that, right?
Yeah, the story that came out, she did an interview with an outlet called Newsy. Which we covered, and basically Deborah Birx revealed that she was willing to help the next administration, the Biden administration, with the sort of new version of the coronavirus task force, but that she had every intention to shortly after the Biden administration got all the help that they could get from her, that she wanted to retire. And the reason that she gave was that she didn't love the treatment that she and her family had received shortly after Thanksgiving. Mostly by the media and, of course, the sort of predictable kind of naysayers on Twitter. The story was that she, you know, during the holidays, it was reported that she went to a second home of hers in Delaware with her family. And of course, it was sort of lumped into the stories of Gavin Newsom's dinner at French Laundry, the Austin's mayor's, you know, telling his constituents to stay home from a condo in Cabo. So she was looped into, aha, this hypocrisy. It's not clear that that's entirely fair. It appears that she's putting her house up for sale. And then she actually sort of revealed in this interview that, you know, her family has not been immune to the same stress, depression, and frustrations that we've all felt amid this sort of self-quarantine lockdown, really strange, spooky, and surreal time. And she made it sound like less that she was like angry at her treatment and more that like she kind of needed to take care of her family because she's the primary breadwinner and it was a tough time. But she's sort of something of a controversial figure given the last 9 months of the coronavirus task force.
Yeah, and look, I certainly imagine it's been rough. You know, being a public figure like that, she's had less of a distance between her and Trump than Dr. Fauci has for a very long time, but there's still probably a little bit of that. I imagine that she's probably been getting death threats on a daily basis for the last 6 months or so. That said, one thing that I wonder that didn't come up in that as one of the potential reasons was, I forget if it was Axios or who, but a couple of weeks ago they were saying that she was apparently angling to try to, like Dr. Fauci, move into the Biden administration, but that the word was that she was considered too toxic and that the American people don't necessarily trust her. Have you heard anything about that as a potential factor?
I read the similar report, and I don't know any insight as to exactly what her ambitions were. I will say that, you know, I will be more charitable with her and say that, you know, after the last 9 months of being in the Trump administration amidst this horrible pandemic, I don't blame her for wanting to step down and retire. That said, like, you know, it immediately begs the question of what is Dr. Birx's legacy, right? Is she is she someone that was sort of like the public health expert that helped you know, save lives by, you know, reiterating the importance and the severity of this issue? Or was she something of an enabler to President Trump and his crazy? I mean, his dangerous, crazy herd immunity. I suspect that she would argue that, you know, predictably, that, you know, she would say something like, if I were there, you know, it would have gotten much worse. And that's true. But that overlooks the fact that she could have very easily been public and said, hold up, red flags, you don't want to know, here's what's really being saying. And I think, you know, DC rewards a craven set of operators who are unwilling to take chances and risks. And I think that's what she is. I mean, I think she swallowed her tongue. She didn't say her bit when it was most important. And now I think her legacy is as much a Trump enabler as it is, you know, a public health expert at a time where we really need smart public health experts.
Yeah, I think she will be remembered most for sort of just existing, and, you know, we don't know exactly what she did behind the scenes, but in terms of publicly speaking out against either Trump individually or the administration's response or Mike Pence or whatever, I didn't see a lot of that. But one thing that she did say early on that I'm always going to remember is she talked, and this was in just the first few weeks of the US version of the pandemic, she talked about how Trump, like, you only have to explain one medical or scientific thing to him once and he gets it. Like, nobody gets it as fast or as easy as him. He understands it better than doctors. And I remember at the time being blown away by that. And I assumed she's got to be a crazy Trumper if she's talking about him in that way. But she doesn't, in hindsight, really seem to have been. To talk about the guy that would go on to promote hydroxychloroquine and talk about UV lights and bleach in those terms strike me now as one of the most insane parts of the pandemic from, you know, a public relations point of view.
Well, I mean, exactly right. Well, don't totally agree with that. I will say that, you know, sort of as I kind of alluded to earlier, you know, ambitious people inside the Beltway, politicos, are by and large all sycophants, right? The Trump administration and this White House in particular really rewards. It's like sycophancy on steroids. It's on a higher level. And I think that, you know, she fell into that trap, and I'm not trying to defend her. I think that that was, she probably regrets, and she deserves every bit of criticism. You raised a question earlier about, like, you're not really sure what she did. I mean, I will say that what she sort of spearheaded, I don't know if you remember, like, in sort of after 4th of July weekend, June, July, we saw, like, cases spiking. First it was Arizona, Texas, Florida, and California, and then spread through a bunch of other Midwestern states. And she was the one that spearheaded, like, sort of state by state, governor, health, like, here's what you need to do to abate that. And when you saw, like, if you see the chart, it went down in August. I think you can largely give her some credit for abating that spread. But, you know, she may have won that small battle and lost a much larger war because, you know, she was part of a crew that basically wave the white flag in this war on the coronavirus. So yeah, I mean, she was a suck up, and she was a suck up and kept her space in power. And, you know, I think that's probably as much her legacy as the scarves that she wore that were so fetching coronavirus task force, which is probably an unfair criticism, but that was certainly her iconic image.
Yeah, and one that Donald Trump pointed out himself. Yeah, so complicated legacy. As with everything of 2020, we're gonna have to see, you know, what people remember and what eventually fades away. I want to turn to the next step. So Biden, assuming none of these long shot attempts to, you know, reverse the outcome of the election, is going to be taking over the response to the pandemic soon. He has said that he is going to be calling for a nationwide 100-day mask mandate. He's going to be in charge of the vaccine rollout. So what I'm curious, from your perspective, in terms of the media coverage of the government's response to the pandemic, it's no longer going to be Trump's thing. It's going to be Biden's thing very soon. Where do you see Fox News going from here in terms of how will they greet any of the big Biden efforts to fight back against this thing?
They will fight it tooth and nail. I mean, it's fascinating cognitive dissonance. I will say, to correct this tiny thing that you said, Biden said that he was going to mandate mask wearing in all the federal locations that he could allow it. But more than importantly, yes, I think he's going to model that behavior. And he's going to basically say, we're going to do that. And something I've noticed over the last 6 weeks or so, you know, there has been this low level mocking of mask wearing on Fox News that has largely gone away. I think, you know, since the Trump rallies ended, you see less mocking. You've seen a pivot from the mocking of mask wearing to the lockdown and the closing of local businesses. And, you know, Trump is, you know, Fox News has really embraced a populist movement, and they are genuinely, well, not genuinely, they are concerned about the sort of these people who are going out of business. So I think as Biden inherits this, for lack of a better term, show of the next 3 months, and we're going to see continued surges and continued body counts, and you're going to see governors that are going to try to lock things down. You're gonna continue to see this populist agenda of like, you can't lock us down. That's no good. It's completely divergent from what are public health risks. So there's a bit of a dissonant thing. But anything that they can use, regardless if it's true and real or based in reality at all, to criticize the Biden administration, especially on their opinion programming, we will see that ad nauseum. I mean, we've already started to see that, and that's, you know, in that way, Fox News is kind of well positioned for the Biden administration because it's much easier for them to be contra Biden than it is to try to defend the Trump administration.
So that opens up an interesting possibility. I'm very curious about your opinion on this. So obviously, they would be consistent in opposing most of what Biden might propose to do to try to fight back against this. What I'm curious about is they've, you know, as the cases have gone up and as the deaths have gone up, they've seemingly month by month cared less and less. Like, we're passing a third of a million, they barely even acknowledge that it's happening. So does that mean that, like, if there are a lot of cases and a lot of deaths, in theory, I might have assumed they would knee jerk use that against Biden, that look at him, he's presiding over this big failure. But will they be able to do that while criticizing anything to stop it from spreading?
So I watch Fox and Friends every morning to try to sort of like find these sorts of inconsistencies. And it's, you know, it's great social anthropology. It's created, like, I'm a very cynical and skeptical and angry person as a result very often. They did a year end recap of Fox and Friends the year 2020. Didn't mention anything really in that whole year recap about like the 300,000 deaths. Or there was a show like the daily death count passed 3,000 for the first time. Didn't even get mentioned on 3 hours of Fox and Friends.
Wow.
And obviously because it reflects poorly on the Trump administration, or so they think. You know, a reasonable person would say that they are too shameless to pivot to counting death tolls under the Biden administration because it's clearly something that he inherited. But shame is not something that factors into the calculus of the rundowns of Fox and Friends and other opinion programming. And so what I suspect you say is it won't be as clear as, you know, what they'll say is like, there's now 5,000 daily deaths. Under Trump, it was only 3,000. And sadly, you know, there's a real lack of critical thinking out there, many of whom these people sort of watch. You know, it's all so stupid. It's all so dumb. And so, yes, it wouldn't shock me at all. You and I would say, like, how could you reasonably criticize increased death toll under Joe Biden? That would make no sense. Fox opinion hosts will say, watch us do it. And, you know, reason and facts don't matter. It's all, sadly, it's funny, it's all about feelings, right? Like, for a political argument that says facts don't worry about your feelings, Fox opinion program is all 100% aggrieved about how their identities are being canceled when really they're just being held to account.
You know, there's one last thing I want to ask you about, and that is, you know, up until very recently, the vaccines were always a thing that we were looking ahead to. It wasn't a thing that they had to deal with on a daily basis. But now we've already passed 500,000, you know, people who are going to be vaccinated. That's going to be going up. And Biden's going to be supposedly doing everything he can to raise it as much as possible. We know that there is a certain segment of the population that is anti-vaccine. It's not exclusive to the right. There are, you know, centrists and leftists who've been anti-vaccine historically. I have sort of predicted that they have opposed pretty much everything that can stop COVID from spreading. They basically approach the news as if they are advocating for the spread of the virus. The vaccine will stop it. So I would assume that you'll be consistent and stand against that. but they have presented the vaccine as a solution to all the problems. We don't need to do these other things because we'll be able to be vaccinated. The only evidence I have so far is a couple of nights ago, Tucker Carlson did a segment about the vaccine where he criticized the rollout of it, criticized the fact that celebrities are talking about getting it. It's this whole glitzy PR thing and everything. And he says he's pro-vaccine. It's not the same as saying don't get the vaccine, but they've been so against everything. Do you think that there's a chance that they will turn against the vaccine at some point?
I don't. I mean, I through my work, I've developed pretty close relationships with honored talent and executives at Fox News. And you know, what I found is that everyone there basically, not everyone there is a true believer. In my experience, you know, they're more interested in selling soap, you know, ad revenue. I don't think two things. I don't think anyone there really believes that they would turn anti-vaccine. I think that's way too far. And if they did, they know that they would be reasonably crucified by every reasonable person, particularly, you know, the non-crazy set of the GOP. I mean, believe it or not, there's still a large section of Republicans who privately, you know, sort of admit that Trump is a joke and a lot of what. But you know, we live in a world where basically, you know, Fox News used to sort of kowtow to the Republican Party, and now the Republican Party now kowtows to Fox News. So I don't see that. I think you'll see like the sort of rising fringe element, the Charlie Kirk's, Talking Point USA, Dan Bongino's, who may go that far. But I think they also know that like Dan Bongino wouldn't do that because he'd very easily risk losing his place on Fox News. So, but you know what? Lower your expectations and never get disappointed. So, you know, let's hope that that's not the case because it's a, you know, the vaccine only works if people take it.
Exactly. Yeah, I hope that you're right because none of these right wingers are going to be listening to my opinion on the vaccine on whether they take it. But maybe if Tucker Carlson gets it, some of them will. So I hope that I'm off base. In any event, Colby Hall, appreciate your contribution, especially joining us here on the show. Really do appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.